From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Every family, every mother knows it. The push-pull tensions around work and home life just don't go away, and especially for women. Last week, a page one New York Times article hit the stands saying many female students at elite Yale University planned to shelve their careers and, quote, happily play a traditional female role with motherhood their main commitment. And suddenly, the whole complicated battle was boiling again. Critics called the story hogwash and old, a rehash that threw women back on a false choice. Feminists fumed that a new generation of women is still left to make brutal trade-offs with so little accommodation from society. And American families, one by one, struggle to find the way. This hour on Point, the perpetually unresolved issue and recurring headline of women, motherhood, and work. You can join the conversation, why is this the story that never seems to go away? And decades after women poured into the workplace, why still this tension? Because motherhood is really a full-time job? Or because the workplace has not been made right for women who are mothers? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, is Jessica Marsden. She's a staff writer for the Yale Daily News. She's been following the furor on her campus over the New York Times story. Jessica, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. So let me ask you, I mean, did you look around and see this? The story said it's almost taken for granted that women at schools like Yale will move into leadership roles on an equal basis with their male classmates. Then it goes on to say there's just one problem with this scenario. Many of these women say that's not what they want. Is that the sense on campus? Did the story get it right?
I think when the story broke, a lot of women who don't want to be stay-at-home mothers said, you know, stop, this isn't what I want. I don't think this represents me. But really, I think it started a dialogue between women who really haven't spent a lot of time thinking about this issue because, you know, they're only 19 or 20 years old.
And the ones, of course, quoted in the story are those saying, for all their accomplishments, what they want to do is stay home. Yale Cynthia Liu says, my mother always told me you can't be the best career woman and the best mother at the same time. You always have to choose one over the other. As this conversation cranks up, does that choice seem like what you and other undergraduates at Yale are facing? You have to choose?
I think there is a sense among a lot of women that there is still a choice has to be made, that you can't really have both yet, especially in some work environments. So a really competitive law firm, for example, might not be willing to accommodate the needs of someone who has to, you know, run home to what go to her child's piano recital in the afternoon or something.
This story went right to the number one spot on the most emailed stories at the New York Times. I mean, everybody flashing this around the country, talking about it. And as I understand from your reporting, Jessica, there on campus, some of the women who were quoted got emails of their own, pretty heated ones.
Yes. As I understand from what their friends have told me, some of the emails have been very angry, coming from off campus as well as people on campus. I think there's been a real sense of shock that you could have made that decision so early without really knowing where your life is going.
Did you have a sense that your classmates, female classmates, look at their own childhood experience, at their own mothers, who are likely to be kind of that the feminist generation, and say, what, they spent too much time at work? We want to be home. That's the implication here.
I think that this whole dialogue is colored by your own mother's experience. I think that most of the conversations I've had with my friends have come down to what someone's mother did and whether you were happy with that choice. I think our mothers are a really major example for us at this point. We don't have a lot of other role models on this balance, on this issue of work-family balance. So yes, I think for mothers who did work full-time, I think there are children who were turned off by that.
Are you and your classmates a little freaked out by the heat of the response around the country to this story?
I think we're part of the heat. I'm not sure anyone was surprised by how much of a response it generated because of the same level of response happened on campus.
We see here, quoted in Louise Story's New York Times story, and she, interestingly, by the way, also a Yale alum herself, but a 2000 survey of Yale alumni, among alumni surveyed who had reached their 40s, 56% of women still worked, 90% of men still worked. A 2005 study finding essentially the same thing, so that women, it appears, even among your sort of cohort there of a greater age, pulling out sooner than men. She concludes, what seems new is that while many of their mothers expected to have hard-charging careers, then scaled back their professional plans only after having children, the women of this generation expect their careers to take second place to child-rearing. Too broad, or is that still going to be hashed out in your classrooms and dorm rooms there?
I think it still has. It's something that still has to be hashed out. I mean, keep in mind there are probably 10 or 15 years before a lot of the women quoted in the story actually have children and confront this issue in their own lives. And a lot of things can change in 10 years, and hopefully a lot of things will change in terms of the amount of accommodation that is made for either men or women who want to focus on taking care of their children at the same time as they continue to work and continue to have a career.
Jessica, is it too personal for me to ask you your own expectation about career and home life, career and child rearing, if that's what you're interested in?
To be honest, I'm 19 years old. I have absolutely no idea. And if I did have an idea, I think one of the lessons of this piece is that I'm not sure I would want to say that view on national radio.
There's honesty straight up, and we appreciate it. Jessica Marsden at the Yale Daily News, thank you very much for joining us, and good luck whatever you decide.
Thank you.
Joining us now from New York is Diane Brady, senior writer for Business Week magazine and mother of three. Diane, thanks for being with us.
Hi, and not 19 years old.
Yeah, me either. We'll deal with that. So you've watched this along with a lot of the rest of us. I mean, just an unbelievable gusher of response here. And first, just journalistically, very tough criticism of this Time story, saying this is old, this is ancient. Jack Slater. Was it Slate or Salon?
Yeah, this is Slate. Yeah, you know, I think for him, I mean, I don't think it's fair to say
Schaefer,
this is old news. This is perennial news. It comes up every single year. It's kind of in the, you know, why are our kids spoiled and why do rich guys sometimes dump their wives for younger women? I mean, there's certain issues that come up that just touch a nerve. And this one especially, because every woman in the workforce has to deal with this issue. And there are a lot of people who feel they fought to, you know, for women's rights. And here's a crop of girls at an elite college who apparently are willing to chuck it away. And I don't get as panicked over this piece as a lot of people, but I do think it's an issue that just immediately elicits responses in people.
Well, but the criticism from the journalistic angle, Jack Schaefer's, was that there's a kind of iron framing put around this issue that doesn't let it evolve. He points back to a New York Times story 25 years ago, 1980, which begins almost the same way, quoting an undergrad at Princeton with all these great accomplishments, saying that when she marries and has children, she plans to quit whatever job she has. He went out and tracked her down on Google, and she is, you know, she was at
Blackstone, yeah.
Yeah, Morgan Stanley for years. Now she's at Blackstone. She's a high-powered businesswoman. I mean, he's saying essentially, why does the press keep throwing this kind of black and white false choice on women? Is that a fair critique?
I think there's something to his critique insofar as when you're 19, you don't know how your career is going to be. And it's false also to assume that the only people who feel they have to work are lower-income, poor women, single women. A lot of women who make a lot of money do feel they have to work. So they don't know what sort of situation they're going to be in 8-10 years down the road. And let's face it, they're not going to have leadership positions, most of them, in 8 years. They'll be at a point in their career where they'll have to decide, do I really want to make it? And if I do, I'll probably have to stay here in some capacity.
The piece also took a lot of heat for calling this a trend, you know, based on the relatively small sampling of opinion and projection that was done here. But is there a trend, Diane Brady, that you see from your perch at Business Week? Can you see women heading into or out of the labor market in greater numbers because of motherhood?
I'll tell you, I've written about this insofar as, you know, the opt-out. You follow an MBA class and, oh my gosh, all these women are suddenly opting out to have kids. I'll tell you one trend that I think is happening with both men and women, which is there's more attention to family. If you look at the percentage of college-educated men who want jobs with more responsibility, that's plummeted in the last 10 years. Far fewer of them want jobs with more responsibility. They want to spend more time with their kids.
And you're talking
now,
men there.
I'm talking men. Now, for them, they see it usually as a combination of work and home life. I think for women, there is the feeling they have to make a choice, but I think that increasingly they don't have to because of technology. They can work flex time. they can be at a soccer game, you know, pounding away on their BlackBerry. I don't think it's quite the scenario that maybe some of these girls saw in the 80s or early 90s, where it was moms at the office for 12 hours and that's it if she has a high-powered career.
This has also been characterized, almost mocked, as a choice of affluent women, women who will marry some of those guys, maybe at Yale, who will make so much money they don't have to work, that it's a kind of, you know, upper-class, upper-middle-class, cushy lifestyle choice.
You know, to some extent, there's some truth in that, insofar as if, you know, if you've got a husband who's making $300,000 a year, then suddenly the choice doesn't seem, it's not quite so stark, I suppose, but there are a lot of people who do feel they have to work even in the upper income brackets. They're in a bad school district. They feel their kids have to go to private school. I think in at least one-third of homes now, the women make more money than their husband, so they're the primary breadwinner.
Hard to walk away from that.
Yeah, and it's also your experience in life. I can tell you, I just had a baby. He's 4 months old.
Congratulations.
Thank you. One reason that got me back to work quicker was not that I love him any less than the other two, but we just bought a house at the top of the market, and boom, all of a sudden we've got these big mortgage payments, and sitting at home with a nanny suddenly seems like an incredible extravagance and something that would be financially tight for us. So everybody finds themselves in different situations. I do think it's hard to project when you're 19 years old, but I also am not quite as harsh as Jack. I think there's some validity to asking teenage girls what they think, because they're projecting what their life is going to be like. It won't turn out like that, but I think it's valid to try and figure out where their head's at, because it is different from previous generations.
They're saying what they see. Diane Brady, we congratulate you on your new baby. We wish your luck with
you.
Motherhood and work, and grateful to you for being with us. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
Diane Brady with Business Week. We are talking about women and work. 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the perpetually unresolved issue of women and work and the latest furor over reports of elite college women aiming for the mommy track. You can join us. What do you think? Why is this the story that never goes away? Does this framing get it right? And what do you make of Yale College women saying they intend to rack up degrees and then go home to be moms? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I am joined from Cleveland, Ohio right now by Heather Boucher. She's an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington. Heather, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show today.
From New York City by Amy Richards, writer, activist, lecturer, founder of Third Wave, a national foundation for young feminist activists. She's working on a forthcoming book, Opting In, The Case for Motherhood and Feminism. Amy Richards, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And with me in the studio, Jennifer Braceras, Harvard Law graduate, former lawyer at prestigious law firm in Boston. She left that firm after her second daughter was born. She has 4 children now. She's kind of the woman or the subject of the hour. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer, let me go to you first, because you're not exactly of this generation that we're talking about here, or that was had the spotlight put on them in the New York Times piece.
No, far from it.
Far from it. You've been out of school for a while, but you've got those kind of bona fides, those kind of credentials here, and you're at home with the kids. So when you see these women quoted, and we'll talk about whether or not this is representative of what's really happening or going to happen, but when you see them quoted saying, I'm going to get my degrees, but no, I'm not headed into the workplace. I'm headed home to have kids. How do you respond? What do you say to it? Is that your choice?
Well, I think that, first of all, as some of your other guests said earlier, a lot of these women don't know what the future holds in store for them. I often describe myself as a stay-at-home mother because I am primarily with my kids, but the truth is I have several part-time jobs. I consult. I work entirely from my home. And there are some weeks where I don't work at all and some weeks where I work 3 or 4 hours.
So here's the more complicated reality, kind of blending everything.
Exactly, exactly. So I think my kids perceive me as basically a stay-at-home mother, which is the way I want it to be, but I have a lot of interesting professional opportunities as well.
And Amy Richards, how do you interpret, we'll talk about the bigger picture, but how do you interpret the impulse of the women quoted in the story, the very young women quoted in the story? What do you make of them saying, I'm not going to do that, I'm going home?
Well, I think we have to judge or examine the problem without judging the women. And it was kind of sad to hear that those women were getting so many personal emails at their accounts, because the reason I think women feel that they have to make this choice is because the workplace is not yet accommodating to working parents. And so when they're asked this question, especially when they're 19 and not in the workplace, they only see it as a choice of one or the other. Are you going to work or are you going to take care of your children? And as Jennifer just alluded, and I think that if we examine our own friendships, the majority of us do some hodgepodge in our lives between work and family. And I think that's what the majority of people, men and women, want at some point. And so I think that while maybe an instinct is to say, oh, these women are 19, they don't know what they're going to be like, I think that we have to look at what these women do know at 19, which is that they're watching the people ahead of them and watching their lives feel very limited and feeling like they only have two choices. And how can we change that?
But for a lot of women, aren't there really kind of two choices? I mean, Jennifer Braceras manages with her Harvard Law degree to work out of home and do things from there. Others do as well. But for an awful lot of women, the choice is kind of work and juggle everything else or don't work, at least don't have a significant income. Isn't it, Amy?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, because even friends of mine who are, because the question is, are you working or are you being a full-time parent? And the majority of the friends that I have who are full-time parents, now granted, I went to an elite college and I have lots of friends who are in that upper income bracket and who went to the same kind of pedigree that I have.
Yeah.
They have full-time nannies. And so even when they're not working outside of the home, they're having somebody else help them with their child care. And so I don't think the choice is that black and white. I think that it is much more nuanced than that. And as Jennifer said, she wants her kids to perceive her as a stay-at-home parent. But in fact, she does work on and off. And I think that that is something that most women want. And whether work is defined specifically by being in the paid workforce or work is, you know, getting involved in an organization that is in your community or even in your children's best interest, you're doing something beyond, I think, taking care of your children. And that's the issue.
Lots of ways to be engaged, clearly. On the other hand, by no means does everybody have a nanny and the freedom that comes with that. Or maybe even my guest Jennifer Braceras' options with her Harvard Law degree. Heather Boucher in Cleveland, what do the numbers look like here? Can you describe for us, what's the number of women who, of working age women who stay home with kids as opposed to being in the workforce by choice? Do we know?
Well, that's a very difficult number to give, but the reality is that the overwhelming majority of mothers are in the labor force. And it is true that women who have higher education are more likely to be in the labor force than women with less education. So some of this very interesting discussion about what happens to women who go to elite colleges, many of them will stay at least part-time and work through having children. But the reality is that they have far more options than the vast majority of women in the labor market. Most American women do not have access to the kinds of workplace flexibility that we've been talking about so far on this program.
Mm-hmm.
Nor do they have access to the kinds of leave that would make it possible for them to take time off when they have their first or second or third child for a few months or even a year and be paid. Women who don't have a college degree are far less likely to be paid during maternity leave compared to women with more education. So the reality is very different for women across the income spectrum, primarily because they're married to different kinds of men with different kinds of income potential, but also because the jobs are so different. And a high-powered career track is going to give women a little bit more flexibility in some ways, although there is a glass ceiling there, and this flexibility is going to relegate women in many ways to the mommy track, but at least they have it, whereas a woman working at Walmart or a woman working in the service sector is not going to have that kind of flexibility to set her hours.
What portion of women are out working these days? Is it steady, rising, falling? Is that clear?
Well, we've seen that the recession of 2001 has hit women harder than previous recessions. Women across the board lost more in terms of employment than they did in the recession of the early 90s or the previous recessions. And what's been interesting about what's happened over the course of the recovery is that whereas in the early 1990s, by this point in the economic recovery, women's employment had increased by over 6%, we haven't seen that kind of bounce back in women's employment during this recession. And I think it's because they were hit so hard. Women are now in a much more diverse array of occupations and industries, many of which are more likely to be hit by economic downturns. So we've seen declining employment for women across the board, and it's been slightly larger among prime-age women with children. But that certainly doesn't mean that these women are opting out. It certainly does mean that the labor market has been very difficult for women over the past few years, and that is undoubtedly adding to family stress and may make some women choose to stay at home rather than keep pounding the pavement trying to find a new job.
We've got a lot of women who want to join this conversation. I want to begin to turn to them. We're talking about this unresolved issue of women and work and the notion that elite college women opting out. Well, what do you make of the notion? Good, bad, indifferent? Beth is calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Beth, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
My comment is, first of all, I should say that I'm a single mom to a toddler, and I'm trying to juggle. I teach, and I also am working on a graduate degree, and I'm lucky to have family support. But my comment is, I'm wondering how much of the sort of uproar over this study or this report mm-hmm. is based in the fact that it came out of such an elite school. And my comment is, it seems like we're seeing motherhood still as not only unpaid labor, but as unskilled labor in some way, by saying that these degrees and this education that these women are receiving are somehow wasted if they're not put into use in the broader workforce. I mean, I personally was lucky enough to go to an elite school, and I, as much as I think it goes to use when I teach my high school kids in my outside-the-home job, the very best thing that I can do for my daughter is to give her the education that I received through my college degree. So I'm wondering why so many people seem to be making the argument that these degrees, especially at higher-level universities, are wasted somehow on women that might want to use this information or their learning to pass on to their children. I don't understand why.
Beth, we've got it exactly. Saying there's no waste here. Take that great degree and invest it right in the people who are closest to you. Amy Richards in New York, how about that?
Beth, it's such a great question, because feminism, and historically, I'm talking about the 60s and the 70s, had two main goals when it came to mothering. One was choice, that women didn't feel that they had to be solely mothers, that they could enter the workforce. And I think that we're seeing that expression of choice in this generation. But the second part of it was that we value motherhood, not only so women could be valued in those roles, but that those roles could be valuable enough for even men to want to choose them. And it is disturbing to me that we're not talking about the value of motherhood at all, and not specific to the article in the New York Times, but other articles that have touched on this. You're right, it is. They're wasting their degree, and the women themselves say the workforce was too hard. I wanted an easier way out. Whereas the feminist approach initially was, mothering is the hardest, toughest job you can do. It's the most valuable contribution you can make to society. Let's add a value to it. And there have been feminists and economists who have actually tried to attribute what would be an economic value for mothering, and it is a well-paid job when you break it down. And when you start paying someone else to do it, you realize that it could be a lucrative profession. But why is it that in lieu of having money, that it's not valuable? And I think that we do need to put a value on that.
Jennifer Braceros, you're kind of the walking, talking example here. You've got your Harvard Law degree, and I should say this is an issue right across the economy for people. You've got plenty of people who don't have fancy degrees or a lot of money who are trying to, let's say, do homeschooling or carve out their own way. But in your case, I mean, you know, the traditional line on these schools is these will educate the leaders of tomorrow. These are the people who are going to, you know, take up the great burdens of society and move the whole thing forward. People sort of expect CEOs and presidents to come here. So is it a mismatch to invest that in child rearing or not?
I don't think it's a mismatch. I think that having an Ivy League degree opens a lot of doors for you in terms of flexible part-time opportunities, as we've seen in my own experience and the experience of many of my classmates.
So for you personally, it works. It facilitates a kind of array of options. But what about the duty to society at large here versus your duty or what you bring to your children, your family?
Well, I think the answer to your question is twofold. First of all, I think you've really hit on exactly why this article has caused such a stir, because I think that there are many people within the organized feminist movement who feel that they worked very hard to create opportunities for younger women, and that by saying that they've been admitted to Yale, they've been admitted to Harvard, but they may later on step out of the workforce to raise children, I think some of the feminist leaders worry that the doors will close.
That it's a kind of betrayal of the promise, or that the
not just that it's a betrayal of the promise, but that these Ivy League institutions will look at future applicants
and
say,
hey, wait a minute,
should we invest in these young women? Now, I don't think that's a legitimate fear or concern, but I think that's part of what's driving the anxiety in feminist leaders when they hear these young women say they may stay home.
So as a mother who's taken that Harvard degree, it could be any degree, I suppose, but and invested it in her children, what do you say to that hypothetical observer who might say, wait a minute, have we wasted this education?
I would say absolutely not, because I'm still involved in my profession, even if not full time. And I am investing my education in my children. But I guess the third point would be that eventually when they're all in school, I will be going back more actively.
So it's temporary. Anne's calling from Sackett Harbor, New York. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
We're good. What do you think?
Well, I didn't graduate from an elite school, but I did give up a really good Navy career. I was a lieutenant in the Navy when my triplets were born 6 years ago, and then I had another child.
Triplets, you say? So you got a lot in a hurry.
Yes, I had a lot in a hurry, and I loved my career, and giving it up was a sacrifice, but it was done because of the issue of child care. You look at child care settings, and for infants, it's hard to find a good choice there. You're looking at a daycare environment, which can be wonderful or can be really difficult for kids with lots of turnover in staff, or you're looking at trying to find the perfect nanny. And I understand there are some out there, but I never did find one.
Mary Poppins, come quick.
Right. So, you know, I think the child care issue is huge. Even if you have money to afford child care, making that choice is hard.
So the Navy ends up losing you, Anne. You end up losing some income on that front. And how should this be addressed? Are we educating and training up women and then not getting full advantage of their skills because we haven't restructured in order to make that all work together?
I don't know the answer to that. Now my kids are in school, and I'm trying to rebuild my career, going back to getting my graduate degree. But somebody's got to make money, so that's my husband. So I still tend to be the one, even if I'm working at my part-time job or at school, who gets called for the fevers to come home for this and that.
Right. We know well.
Right, and I'm always torn. You know, I want to be with my kids, but I need to do this. I need to have my own career as well.
There's the tension right there, Anne. Thank you for your call. Heather Boucher, what about the issue of child care? Is that what stands behind all this? Is there a scenario in which better child care, perhaps integrated with the workplace, might liberate women to work with less tension in both of these arenas?
Undoubtedly, the lack of available and affordable and enriching child care is a significant problem for working mothers all over the country. There's been some movement in some states to move towards universal pre-kindergarten programs. I was just talking to some folks from Oklahoma last night, and they have a wonderful program for universal child care pre-kindergarten for all four-year-olds, which does go a long way to help parents know that they're leaving their kids in a safe place and that they're going to be getting some educational activities and all that. And without that, it's a non-choice for many mothers and fathers to sort of have to look at the real paucity of options in terms of child care. Study after study has shown that we simply do not have enough adequate slots. And on top of that, child care is so expensive for most families. In the bottom 40th percentile of families can spend up to a fifth of their income on child care when they use it, which is a significant portion, and is probably more than they'll spend when their kids go to college for many families. So that's an issue. But I wanted to make one other comment on the previous caller's call about valuing motherhood. And one of the things that we talk about is that they're right, that we don't value motherhood. And at the other end, we penalize mothers so severely in the labor market.
When? How? Why?
Well, over time, moms earn about 3 to 10% less relative to non-mothers for each child that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this lifetime pay penalty that mothers are going to pay when they take time out of the labor market and when they have children. And we've done very little to ameliorate that or to make it possible for people to have this work-family balance, and also for women not to bear the brunt of this financial burden.
Could send a woman headed straight home if she had that option. Of course, not everybody does. Heather Boucher, I know we have to let you go. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Heather Boucher with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Jennifer Braceras, Amy Richards, please stand by. We're talking about the perpetually unresolved issue of women and work. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital, for more than 60 years helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women and work and the latest furor over reports of elite college women aiming for the mommy track. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I've been joined in the studio this hour by Jennifer Braceras, Harvard Law grad at home with her four kids, but not unbusy from home, we hear. Amy Richards has joined us from New York City. She's founder of Third Wave, a national foundation for young feminist activists. She's author of the forthcoming book, Opting In, The Case for Motherhood and Feminism. And we're joined right now from Philadelphia for a minute by Kelly Lauer. She is a stay-at-home mom, kind of, 8 hours a week of work. She's a clinical social worker, mother of two. Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We've been hearing about these kind of high-powered, highly credentialed women maybe opting out or thinking about opting out of work. But I guess you're an example, Kelly, where it's not just fancy degrees and people with potential huge pay who are making this choice. You've made the choice from a different angle.
That's right. Myself and many of my friends, we actually are solidly middle income and probably even lower once we've made the decision to stay home with our children. You know, many of my friends are social workers, teachers, and have husbands that are in similar type of, you know, earning positions.
So how do you understand your choice as a woman, as a feminist or not? You tell us.
I'm definitely a feminist. I think motherhood is definitely a feminist issue, which is often I think people forget.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in terms of making my decision, and I would say most of my friends felt this way too, it was sort of a two-piece decision. There was sort of the emotional component in that we really had the desire to be with our children. And for some of this sort of took us by surprise. It wasn't really something we had anticipated. And because of having relatively lower incomes, economically, huge consequences, and it wasn't an easy decision to make. But sort of the emotional piece, like, overruled, and that was the decision many of us have made.
So when you hear these young women or read them quoted saying they think, despite all their degrees, this is what they're going to do, go back home, do you say, you go, girl, or what a waste, or how do you read it, Kelly?
Well, I think I read it similar to what many of the other speakers have said today, and just that, you know, I think it is a very complicated decision to make. And I think one interesting piece that sort of hasn't been addressed is sort of the language of opt-out or choice. I think part of the problem is that there really is not a good choice. It sort of becomes, you know, one or the other, and neither is really necessarily the option that somebody would look for. I think, you know, many women, given the choice, would pick to have, you know, a really meaningful part-time work that wasn't going to be, they weren't going to be penalized for later, and would also want the option to be with their children.
I can hear women, you know, welling in positive response to that idea all over the place. Is that practicable, Amy Richards? Could we have somehow a different structure here so that women could have and maintain right through their careers, you know, a full career or professional life and that full engagement with their families, or is that pie in the sky?
Well, I think Heather kind of alluded to this, is that there are opportunities in certain workplaces. There's flex time. There's, you know, leave. I have a friend who works at Newsweek, and you can take up to a year off from your job and come back to it. But the opportunities, or who these opportunities are available to, are upper income people who are in these jobs in the first place. And the other thing is, you know, we've heard a lot about the celebration of the Family Medical Leave Act, which mm-hmm. made it possible for parents to take parental leave. But it only applies to workplaces that have more than 50 employees, which is not the majority of employees in this country. And so even when we have this groundbreaking and celebrated piece of legislation that was supposed to make it easier for parents to have at least some time with their parents, with their children. Mm. One, it was not paid. And two, it was not applicable to the majority of employees. And so there are things out there. I think the other thing, and Heather talked about this and one of the callers alluded to it, is, I mean, the United States should be embarrassed that we're the only industrialized country without some form of national child care in this country. And so I think that there are some examples that exist internationally that we could learn from. And I think that a lot of it is beyond even what we can legislate either in the workplace or through the government, but is our own actions. I mean, even when you work in at Morgan Stanley, yeah. there is paternity leave and the fathers don't take it. There is maternity leave, but the mothers don't take it. And so I think that we also need the leadership on an individual basis. I think that the examples are out there. We just need to maximize them.
Well, we hear these undergraduates, in a way, making their own statement on just that front. Anna's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Anna. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What do you think?
Basically, I just wanted to point out that a lot of times research on this topic, and particularly the most recent survey, focuses pretty much on women as if a woman's choice. And I think it's a bit unfair, and it shortchanges both men and women that men are never, it seems to be, called to make that choice between balancing home and the workplace. It seems it's always assumed that the guy is going to work and that apparently it's not that much of an effort for him because nobody's doing really many surveys.
So why is the choice always in the woman's lap, you're saying?
Right, exactly.
We've got it. Anna, let me put that to Jennifer Braceras. Let me ask you, Jennifer, you came home to stay with the four kids. Did you consider, you've got a Harvard Law degree, you could go out and have a good income. Did you consider having Mr. Braceras come home?
Absolutely not. And my husband is also an Ivy League lawyer, and we had similar incomes.
So why absolutely not?
Because for me, it was just something that I wanted to do, and I believe that most women feel the same way. And in fact, I would argue that, you know, there are many men who envy the choices that women have to be able to stay home, work part-time.
When
and if they have those choices. But in our society today, women have a far greater array of choices than do men as far as what type of work-home balance they create for themselves.
But can you call, I'm just curious, can you call yourself a feminist and then when you come to the question of who stays home with the kids, say absolutely not the husband?
Well, I'm not saying it has to be that way for other families. In my family, I felt certain that I was the one who wanted to be the primary caregiver. And my experiences with most of my friends and people I know that they also feel that way. Now, I have a brother-in-law who's the primary caregiver for his children. And there, I have friends where the male is the primary caregiver. But that is still not the norm. And I believe that that's... I believe that's a product of choice, not societal pressures.
Amy Richards, here's Jennifer. She could go out and be the breadwinner, but absolutely not is her response. So does that knock her out of the box as a feminist in your view, or what do you make of this?
No, not at all. And I think that I don't think men do have the choice, though. I think some men do, but I think there is a lot of pressure on men to be the breadwinner and to live up to their societal expectations. And I think that the societal expectation for women is that they're going to stay home. The societal expectation for men is they're not going to stay home.
Still now, I mean, when the overwhelming majority of women work, so where's the expectation that they'll stay home? Historical?
Well, I think the Yale study gets to that. I think that mm-hmm. when you're asking a 19-year-old, what are you going to do? I think some of the answer of I want to stay home is societal pressure, that's still a more valuable choice.
I disagree.
Is to stay home.
I don't think
Jennifer?
It's societal
society
pressure.
At large.
It's a personal decision.
I think it's personal and emotional. And I think that a lot of women, as one of the callers said before, they feel emotional pulls to stay home with their children, or not necessarily to stay home full time, but to spend as much time with them as possible while
professionally. But these women don't have children yet, the women in the study. So I absolutely agree that there's an emotional pull there. But I think when you're projecting into the future, it is based on signs that you're getting from society, which is what is a more valuable choice.
We've got a caller speaking directly to this, I think. Sylvia's calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Hi, Sylvia, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm an obstetrician. I have four children and happen to also be a single mom. I think, you know, really the biology has been left out of all of this. I mean, women, in fact, do have the children, and the point that has been made by some of the callers, they do want to be with the children. So, you know, on one hand, we have one caller saying that she wants to, her friends want to, she's surprised by that. And then on the other hand, she's saying that, you know, we need better child care, you know, put out by the state or private child care.
But Sylvia, let me ask you, is that then in tension with what a lot of people have understood as the ideals of feminism, that women would march out into the world and do anything that men could do? You're saying, wait a minute, there's biology. That sounds kind of like a throwback.
It is. It's a throwback, and I think women have, you know, I've said this before, have been sold a bill of goods. They think they can have it all. And the real thing is that, number one, we have the babies, and we want, by and large, there's always exceptions, we want to be with the children.
Sylvia, our time is short, but you raise an important point there. Kelly Lauer, how about it? Was it a bill of goods that women could have it all, or are we just getting a more sophisticated understanding of what having it all might mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think definitely that was something that we, you know, in my generation, we were sort of brought up to believe was possible. And I think what we found out was just that it's more complicated than that. And that maybe there is a better solution if workplaces could be more flexible. And I know so in some of these sort of women with sort of elite college educational background do have some of those options, but I think not all women do have those options or the ability to advocate for themselves. And I think, you know, this is sort of getting put out there as sort of a class issue, but I really think it cuts across all classes, including poor women. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, also sort of how our society views mothering is very obvious if you look at sort of the welfare reform laws and how the welfare to work program. And basically they determined it was a better thing for women to be working in menial labor jobs than to be raising their own children. That was more valuable.
Amy Richards, maybe our time is short here, but let me ask you, in this cauldron of reality then, as women deal with all these issues, is our understanding of feminism being rejiggered, or was the popular conception just kind of out of whack to begin with? You're writing on this front.
Well, I think feminism's goal was choice. I mean, it was making sure that women had the choice to choose one or the other. And I think that that has been an opportunity that many women have been able to realize, is I want to make this choice or this choice. But it's still a very limited choice. And so I think that on the one hand, feminism has achieved something, which is that women can choose also not to have children, which is something that some women want to choose. And yet the other half of it, which feminist organizations, the National Center for Partnership for Work and Families and the National Organization for Women and other feminist institutions are examining, which is how do we make it more possible for these choices to not feel so divisive?
And if that doesn't happen, if women are opting out of the workplace, if there is a trend budding here, they opt out in greater numbers, does that come back around, Amy, and disempower women who hoped to be empowered in recent decades?
I don't think so. I think that, one, it'll make the workplace examine the loss of that workforce, and so the workforce will be forced to change, and then women will be able to hopefully make choices that feel more comfortable to them. And I also think that, I mean, feminism's goal is not that women will be 50% of all workers and men will be 50% of all stay-at-home fathers. Feminism's goal is that we will change the value of everything. And underlying this entire Yale study is that we're looking at Yale because that was supposed to produce the leaders of the future, these elite colleges. Mm. Well, the day before this story ran, there was the Fortune 400 list.
Yes.
And 120 of them or something on the list didn't even go to college. And so I think that we also, what feminism is looking at is, why do we continue to value leadership and success in very narrow ways? And so it is a feminist success if parenting is chosen and if it is valued. And that's where I think where we need to bring it back. Feminism has achieved its goal of making it a choice for most women, not all women. And so it still needs to make strides in that area. But more importantly, feminism needs to continue to work to value what goes into parenting and make it a choice that is not only possible for people, but that is actually valued in society.
A kind of getting real here. With that, we're nearly out of time. Amy Richards in New York, founder of Third Wave, author of the forthcoming Opting In. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Kelly Lauer in Philadelphia, wonderful to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jennifer Braceras, I don't know how many years. Are you headed back to full-time work at some point, you know?
Not for several years.
Not
but
for
I'll continue with the part-time for sure.
Well, good luck with the whole package, and thanks for being with us. Jennifer Braceras, mother of four and at home with them. Tricia Rose joins me now. She is professor of American Studies at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and a Yale graduate herself. She's been listening to our conversation on women, motherhood, and work. Tricia Rose, thanks for being with us. What do you hear?
Oh, it's my pleasure. It was a great show. Well, you know, I want to emphasize a few things that I think are very important here. One is that I think we have to really resist this tendency to personalize and make individual what is a profoundly social and collective issue. The question of gender identity, what are women's primary responsibilities in a given society? What are men's? How do we understand workers? We should be having a conversation about how we can support all citizens and workers in their crucial role as workers and as parents. It's a workers' rights issue as well as, you know, a sort of social personal choice for individual women. Personal choice comes out of this larger effort to make a collective statement.
Let me ask you about that, though, if I may, Tricia. When Yale undergraduates choose to opt out in advance, they're saying up front, I'm going to get my degrees and then have kids, are they opting out of exactly that conversation? Are they then themselves going for a personal solution to a bigger social issue?
I mean, I think that, first of all, you could have easily done that story and included women who understood themselves as wanting to work dramatically, significantly throughout their lifetimes and hoping that there would be sufficient child care and institutional corporate support for that work. So you could have done the opposite story. I think this is partly about creating this kind of emphasis and reproducing the anxiety that many women already have around these cultural expectations. And so I don't think that we should really focus on this as if this is a major trend, but that this is an ongoing struggle that is produced. In other words, it's a fraught choice because our national policies don't give all workers the kinds of network of support that we need. And as one of your guests said much earlier, that, you know, we should be embarrassed, you know, as the wealthiest nation in the world, as the only industrial nation that doesn't have the kind of child care support, not just for mothers, for goodness sake, but for families, for children. And most Americans have no option but to work full time.
What about our obstetrician?
Two and three jobs.
Yeah, true enough. What about our obstetrician calling in and saying, folks, you're running into biology here. Women simply want to be home with their kids.
Well, once we can strip our culture from the impact of culture, then I'm willing to talk about biology. In other words, we can't talk about the extent of biology on mothering 5-6 years in unless we can pull out and fully separate all the cultural impact. And we have so much cultural anxiety, investment, and conception of women as mothers that it's insane to imagine that we can talk about biology fully separate from cultural expectations. And I have one other point I wanted to make that, you know, women workers, I think, should be worried about being perceived as mothers who will drop out. It's not only that schools may not, the issue of schools not admitting women because they won't really work, because I don't think schools really worry about that. But I do think that workers might say, hey, if we hire this woman, she's brilliant, smart, wonderful at whatever level type job it is, but she might be dropping out, so maybe we should invest in a male worker. And I think there's something to be said for that worry.
Strip culture of the impact of culture. That sounds like a long-term project. We're going to have to come back to you on that one. Tricia Rose, it's wonderful talking with you. Thanks for listening in, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure entirely.
Tricia Rose, professor of American Studies at the University of California, Santa Cruz. She spoke with me from Santa Cruz. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.